Away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. What's going on Wall Street today, Tom, is what I expected actually yesterday after the supersized rate cut of 0.5%, but Wall Street setting all sorts of new records today. So I guess you could kind of maybe traders took the evening to sort of digest what all this means.
So would you call that more of a bounce than a trend?
Oh, a big bounce. Yeah, big bounce. I wouldn't call it a trend. It's just a huge bounce on all of the indices. Anyway, it is the Buckmaster Show, off and running Thursday, September the 19th, 2024. We're beginning our 15th year with our radio program in January. We come to you from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. It's all part of the Bustos Media team here. We've got five radio stations under one roof, all of the stations doing very well, actually. This one's 1030 KVOI The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. And of course, when we do our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing a couple of those today, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And folks are always invited to join in the conversation. Our live line number is 790-2040. And of course, the area code is 520. Let's go now on the live line for his monthly visit to our program. He is the Democrat who represents District 1 on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors, Supervisor Rex Scott. Supervisor, how are you today?
Bill, I am doing great, and I really appreciate you mentioning the Bustos stations. As somebody who grew up in the 70s and 80s, I have really become a loyal listener of The Drive, 101.7 FM. Just about every day I hear a song on that station that I haven't heard in years.
Yeah, I heard one I haven't heard, that Popsicles, Icicles from 1964, I think it was. It was a one, I can't think of the name of the group, but they had one hit and that was it. And boy, that brought a lot of memories back to my high school sweetheart. But anyway, by the way, 101.7 The Drive will be taking over our weekend watch duties on Fridays and on our show. Dan Gibson is moving on up to Oregon. We'll be working. Dan has been going back into tourism. He was for years with Visit Tucson. He's going up to, I forget the name of the town exactly in Oregon, but it's kind of the new wine center. They've got over 200 wineries, Dan tells me, in that particular area of Oregon, and he'll be doing promotion for them. But anyway, he'll be leaving Tucson and Weekend Watch in a couple of weeks. So our Weekend Watch will be presented by 101.7, The Drive. So we're excited about that, Rex.
Well, Dan will be missed, and I wish him well in his new endeavor. I wonder if he's going up to Medford. I think that might be an area that is noted for its wineries.
It's north of Medford. It starts with an M. It's an MC, somethingville, and I'll have Tom maybe look that up for me during this particular segment. Anyway, how are we doing with the move to put the next 20-year transportation program, known as the RTA Next, in front of the public so they can start commenting on it? And of course, Rex Scott, you are the representative of Pima County on the 9-member board, the Regional Transportation Authority Board.
Bill, I think we are in terrific shape. The board is going to meet again on September 26th. We last met on September 5th, and at our September 5th meeting, we agreed to table every other RTA Next draft proposal besides the one that we're going to take up on the 26th. And the one that we're taking up on the 26th is the result of a tremendous amount of work that started with staff from the town of Sabarita and staff from Pima County, and then was embellished by our chair, General Ted Maxwell. And I think General Maxwell has done what leaders need to do in a situation like this. He has found out what are the top priorities and concerns of the various jurisdictions, and has always, always encouraged all of us to keep in mind the paramount importance of regionalism, not only in terms of the importance of collaborating on things like roads and transit, but also recognizing that if we don't have an RTA next, once the current RTA plan ends at the end of June in 2026, we don't have a plan to take its place, we're going to lose a substantial portion of the local revenues that we devote to our transportation infrastructure, and there's not going to be anything to replace that.
So this is So we're talking about some kind of a compromise, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We are, and you know, probably the key to the compromise goes back to something that we decided unanimously. All nine of us are aware of what happened after the Great Recession. In terms of the fact that the RTA plan that was passed in 2006, because of the economic impact of the Great Recession, we didn't have enough revenue complete the projects that were in that first plan. And so we had to use other regional funds that come in to the region from the state or federal governments. We didn't want to get into that position again, so we agreed unanimously to use the pessimistic revenue projections for the next 20 years. The basis of the compromise really is that if we exceed those pessimistic projections, what do we do with the excess? Well, the city of Tucson has pointed out that they collect 62% of the sales tax revenue in the region, although it's also fair to point out that those sales taxes are not paid solely by City of Tucson residents. They also make up about 52% of the county's population. So what's going to happen is if we exceed those pessimistic revenue projections, 55%, which is a figure in between the population of the city and the amount that they, the amount of sales tax that they collect within city boundaries, 55% of the proceeds will go to City of Tucson projects. There was also a lot of discussion about how much money should go into areas of the plan, such as money set aside for debt service, especially needed in the first few years of the plan. Money set aside for contingencies. You know, we've seen significant cost increases due to the cost of materials and labor, and there was a desire on a lot of the jurisdictions to make sure there was sufficient funds for contingency. There was discussion about how much money should go into transit and how much of that transit money should go in the city where most of the transit element is based and how much of it should go into other areas within the county. And I believe that we have reached a point where on September 26th, we all feel confident and comfortable to send this plan out for the public review period. And then after we hear what the public says, as they have an opportunity to look under the hood and give feedback to us on the plan, then we'll come back and make any necessary revisions before it is sent to the ballot.
Let's go now on the live line. Matt has called us. And by the way, Dan Gibson's going to a town called McMinnville, which is up in Oregon, a big wine-producing area. And it is northwest of Salem and east of the Cascade Range. But my goodness, there's tons of wine producers in that valley, that Willamette Valley area. Anyway, Matt, go ahead. You're with Supervisor Rex Scott.
Yeah, Supervisor Scott, thank you for the brief up on the RTA situation. My concern right now is, and I think it's a lot of people's concern, is how we navigate the situation with the homeless, the housing, and the fentanyl problem. And interposed in that problem is a strategic plan to rehabilitate the Pima County Jail, either via renovations, repair, or new construction. We haven't heard a lot about that, and I'm sort of concerned that we missed the best opportunity to seek federal assistance on what I consider the Pima County Jail to be a strategic asset for national security on the southern border. Anyway, I'll let you talk those issues. Thank you. Bye.
Do you want to hold off on that, because we are at the break and there's a lot of to cover there? Let's take the break right here, and then we'll have Supervisor Scott respond to Matt's question. Let's take a break. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. By the way, tomorrow, the Friday Focus interview, I'll be talking with Tom Horn, Superintendent of Public Instruction. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. On this Thursday afternoon, we have Supervisor Rex Scott on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Caller Matt brought up actually three very important topics, homelessness, the fentanyl issue, and the possible renovation of the jail. By the way, NPR had an exclusive story yesterday. Fentanyl overdoses in the United States are down dramatically, depending on the community, down 10 to even 30% in major American cities. So health officials are still trying to figure out what that is all about. But go ahead, Supervisor Scott.
Bill, before I got into some of the topics that Matt raised, I just wanted to check and see if you had any follow-up questions after I gave that overview of the RTA Next proposal we're going to take up on the 26th.
No, I think that summarizes it. There, basically, bottom line to all of this, there has been a compromise, and we're now very close to moving forward and letting some of the public hear the blueprint, these listening sessions, and I'm sure there'll be dozens and dozens of them, and then a vote eventually next spring, I believe, correct?
No question. Yeah, okay. That is still our plan.
Okay.
To have the election in May, and I hope people will attend those listening and feedback sessions.
All right, let's see if we can quickly go through some of these items, because I have some other questions for you. But why don't you address Matt?
So the first thing he brought up was with regard to homelessness. At the last point in time count, there were a little over 2,200 homeless people in the in Pima County. And Pima County and the city of Tucson have joint responsibility for what's known as the continuum of care with regard to the federal funds that come into the area for homelessness. And there are also dozens of other agencies that are involved in the local efforts to combat homelessness. And some of the biggest challenges that we face are making sure that there is adequate shelter space, both and all different types of shelter spaces, because the homeless community is diverse and there's no one-size-fits-all approach to shelter. We also need to ensure that we have in place the wraparound services that get to the root causes of anybody's homeless situation. And then one of the more intractable issues that we deal with is, how do you respond to people who refuse shelter and refuse services, and on occasion their behavior, their activities have an impact on public health and safety? So those are some of the issues that we're working on, not just with our jurisdictional partners like the city, but also all of the other agencies in the nonprofit and private sector that take on homelessness. And certainly the fentanyl crisis, the opioid crisis, is a part of that. There was recently an intergovernmental agreement signed by Pima County, the city of Tucson, the town of Marana, and the city of South Tucson in terms of how to make use of our local funds from the opioid settlement case against the pharmaceutical companies, judged to be responsible for the opioid crisis around the country. Sabarita and Oro Valley went their own way with their share of the funds, but the four jurisdictions I mentioned are working in partnership on that. And then with regard to the jail, we are still waiting for staff to finish the research that they were doing, looking into not just the issues at the jail, but also throughout the criminal justice system and the composition of the jail population before we form a new commission that's going to look not just at the jail, but also at issues of recidivism and how we can reduce that and the composition of the jail population and alternatives to incarceration.
All right,
response to three big issues that Matt brought up, and I know he is someone who is very deeply engaged in a lot of policy questions in our area.
He really is. We've got less than 5 minutes to go, and I wanted your reaction to my half-hour interview that I did on Monday with Amber Mathewson. Amber has been with the Pima County Library System for, I believe she said, over 30 years. I think it might be even close to 35 years. So she's very knowledgeable about what's going on with the system. And there is talk, and there's been a report put out on some possible changes for the system. Some of your thoughts?
You know, leaders should lead with both the head and the heart. And that is what you have in Amber Mathewson. Her commitment to the library district and also the patrons of the library district is just without peer. And I really appreciate that she and her staff took a look at staffing and facility issues that have been concerns for a long time. They also looked at the fact that the service model that we have used in the library district has not been reviewed or revised in decades. You have to start a conversation somewhere, and so they put this draft plan out. The feedback that they have heard from board members and from the Library Advisory Board is that there needs to be a lot more outreach and input from our constituents before we're ready to move forward with any component of this plan. Specific to District 1, one of the libraries that was proposed as for possible closure is in the village of Catalina. Many of the patrons of that library live in Pinal County in Saddlebrook and its environs. One of the things that I've asked our staff to look at is, could there be some intergovernmental collaboration between the two counties to support the operations of that branch? And I'm sure the other supervisors who have libraries in their districts that are affected will have similar input. But what they heard, what the library district and county administration heard from all of us, is there needs to be a lot more input and outreach before we do anything with this plan.
All right. We've got a couple of minutes left, Supervisor Scott, and I know the board recently got a report on Pima County's long-term debt picture. How does that picture look?
It looks fantastic. We are going to significantly reduce our overall debt within the next few years. There's two types of debt, voter-approved debt through things like bonds, and then there's debt that is approved by the Board of Supervisors to deal with both short-term and long-term needs. And because the Arizona Constitution imposes expenditure limits on local governments, all local governments use debt in some form to pay for both short-term and long-term needs. Pima County stands out in that we pay off most of our debt within 15 years. Other local governments can take up to 40 years to pay off their debt. We have extraordinarily high credit and bond ratings because of how responsibly we handle debt. It's also important for people to know that state law prohibits us from having a budget with a deficit. And there's a difference between deficits and debt. And I believe that the board has acted responsibly in terms of how we use debt for long and short-term needs. But there cannot be under state law, any budget with a deficit.
All right. I've only got a few seconds remaining. Any closing remarks on your behalf, Supervisor?
You know, just to encourage folks in District 1 who have a need that we can help them with to call our office at 724-2738. I have three outstanding staff members working with me, and they're always ready to be of assistance and support to the people we are proud to represent.
You know, we had so much storm damage up on the northwest side. Has the county been really working ahead to try to get all that ironed out? Because that's something that cannot be cleaned up overnight. I mean, even though it was a month or two ago, there was a lot of damage.
Yeah, our transportation department is exceptional in terms of getting out and dealing with any road damage. We also work in partnership with the utilities, especially TEP, when we need to do some collaborative work with regard to storm damage, and every other county department that may have a role in responding to those needs does an exceptional job. And the Regional Flood Control District has set up a system of alerts for people who live in flood-prone areas, and I'd encourage people to go to the Regional Flood Control District website and find out about that alert system.
All right, Supervisor Rex Scott, thanks. Talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Enjoyed it.
Thanks. All right, we'll take a break right here. Coming up, our aviation contributor, Jeff Lattice.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Speaking of green things, they are located at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Beautiful site, 13 acres. I don't think that Janet and Jack, the owners, could put one more plant on that 13 acres. They have that area just full of opportunities for gardeners and landscapers to have a feast when it comes to the many green things there. And, of course, Zocalo Village, the merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, some beautiful things there. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com, the two websites. They are open daily. And let's see, I think they're in their 53rd year of business at Green Things, so that certainly qualifies them as an institution. We're doing our live line today, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. I'm so honored to have about two dozen contributors on the program. Our contributor on aviation is JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice. Jeff retired from JetBlue after 20 years. He flew nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free aviation, commanding a couple of the Airbus types, the A320 and the A321. A highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot, Jeff Lattice also worked at the Pentagon as an Air Force Special Weapons Officer. He now trains pilots on business jets. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing well. Bill, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for asking. So what's the difference on the A320 and the A321? Is it a matter of size as far as the range of the aircraft?
Yeah, the range is longer on 321s. That's because it's stretched. Mm-hmm. So it's, oh, I don't know, 40 feet longer maybe? I can't really remember back in those days. But it can get up to close to about 60,000 pounds heavier.
Wow.
Is really the 320 R configurations. Oh God, how many did we? We could put up to 200 in a 321, and I want to say the 320 was about 160.
Okay,
to kind of give you an idea.
Okay, that just.
But essentially, it's the same airplane.
All right.
Just longer.
So, the big news in the aviation industry, is this long talked about, and it took a while, but Hawaiian Airlines is being absorbed now by Alaska Airlines, and that has now been finalized. The two airlines are going to keep their identity. What do you know about it?
You know, I've been kind of looking in this, and I don't know if it's gone through the DOJ thing yet. The DOT is the one that approved this pre-merger deal.
Oh.
I think that just happened yesterday.
Yes.
If I'm correct.
Yes.
So basically, I think from me reading the information on it, it allows, because they're two separate companies still, the DOT is allowing them to merge their route structure, from the way I kind of understood the wording is what they're allowing them to do. However, there's going to be like no interference, right? They can't like step on each other's toes when they're doing this. But that's why, you know, I'm a little bit confused about what the next process is. So it's just one of the steps that they're leading into for this merger.
It was a $2 billion, just short of $2 billion deal. And I'm just wondering, you know, they have so many of the overlapping routes. Alaska's been so aggressive in their flights out to the islands. And so there's so much there's so much overlap there. For a bean counter or an accountant looking at that, you know what would come to their minds. Do we really need the two routes from like Orange County, or how many flights they do a day
overlap? Well, you can probably anticipate once they do come together that, you know, the way they're going to operate is probably going to be a little bit different. This also allows Alaska to have more international presence, because Hawaii goes to Asia.
Yeah.
They don't just come out of the United States or Hawaii. They reach out to Australia and to the East Asia. So that's a big merger in a way, because it opens up so many more routes to different countries. So it's not a bad deal for Alaska. Hawaiian was having some financial problems that Alaska is going to have to absorb. But I personally think it's a great merger. You know, I was hoping that when JetBlue was looking to merge, you know, and the whole Spirit thing kind of fell apart before all that happened, I think most JetBlue pilots were, I hope we go with Hawaiian. So,
yes, rather than Spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that Spirit and JetBlue deal never really materialized, or is it dead completely?
Yeah, it's dead now. The DOJ basically went to court, and the final ruling was you're not going to be allowed to merge. And that's kind of where it sits right now. And JetBlue basically said, okay, we're done with it, and they've walked away from that deal. From my understanding, of course, what's happening behind the scenes, I have no idea, but that's the official word.
Jeff Lattice, there are some big changes coming that are going to impact consumers. And of course, they'll impact the carriers as well, especially this first rule, which is mandating in October that airlines will have to promptly refund customers when flights are meaningfully disrupted. Not sure what that means, or delayed.
Yeah,
the customer will get a full ticket refund on this. And, you know, this could put some additional pressure on the carriers. And I hope it doesn't mean, like, you know, if there's a safety issue or something that, I don't know.
You know, this is, I always take some of these rule changes with a little bit of grain of salt. because if you remember right, about 15 years ago, they had that whole, you know, 3-hour rule deal. You can't be on an airplane on a tarmac for more than 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily true. You can't be in an airplane with the door closed for more than 3 hours if you're on the ground. And if you want to get off, you're allowed to get off after 3 hours. I told people then, I said, yeah, that's not a bad rule, but there are consequences of that too, because when an airliner's got to come back after 3 hours, you're going to have to, like, deplane, replane, you're going to get delayed even longer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are consequences with that. I look at this new rule change and ask, okay, what are the consequences with this? For instance, the rule change is if a plane gets canceled, mm-hmm. you have to get a refund. That is going to be regulatory law that you will get that refund back to you. Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds like a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry about it. You had your flight canceled because of some reason, mm-hmm. or it was delayed grossly. Actually, I don't think it really gets into delays.
Mm.
And this was the reason why I kind of thought about this could be a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
because an airline now, instead of saying, hey, we're going to delay this flight for 3 hours, then we're going to cancel it.
Yeah.
Now you might see we're going to delay this airplane indefinitely. Right? It might be delayed like for 24 hours because they don't want to cancel it because
right.
then they have to do a refund.
Yes.
So I see things. I don't know the rules well enough if they can do that or not. But there are going to be consequences that's going to have to be worked through on this. So, yeah, it sounds like a great thing on paper. But we'll see after they implement it how the airlines are going to react to it.
Yeah, I mean, if you just say, well, the flight is not canceled, just come back. Come back in 24
just
hours.
Around the gate. Yeah.
36 hours.
The gate. I mean, 24 hours later, yeah. you know, you're still there, right? that's an example that might be grossly over exaggerated, but those kinds of things could happen if we, the public, aren't aware of it. So, yeah, it's
still be cautious about that. It seems great, and it's probably a move in the right direction. So, and oh, by the way, if you spent money on your bags too, all that gets reimbursed as well. So any money you gave the airline, if you got canceled, you're going to get it back.
Do you happen to know, does the customer have to initiate that, or do you think that would just be then all of the customers that would automatically have the money refunded?
I think it's an automatic thing.
Okay.
Like I said, I just kind of briefly read this. I've been a little bit busy, and I wasn't able to do a whole lot of research for your show today. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know you're busy.
But I think it'll be an automatic thing. So if your flight gets canceled, then your credit card or however you paid for your ticket should get credited.
All right. Let's.
The way I understand it.
Okay, Jeff Lattice, let's talk about Boeing. They've got some real issues now. Not only
big
do they
time
have
issues.
Yeah, let's talk
it only
about.
It gets worse and worse for them.
I know. Let's pick that up after we take the final break here, and then we'll talk about that in segment four. Jeff Lattice with us on the live line. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Looking at that forecast for Silver City and Grant County, I don't think you could pick a more perfect weekend Look at Saturday, Tom. That's the first time we've seen some upper 40s now in the forecast. So certainly great weekend to take a three-hour drive approximately over to Silver City in Grant County. As far as I'm concerned, when you've got temperatures in the upper 70s, say 77 for the high, 47 for the low, that's about as perfect kind of early autumn weather that you could imagine over in the land of enchantment. Tons of things to do. And if you're thinking of doing some hiking, boy, that is perfect to go out to the Gila National Wilderness there adjacent to Silver City. So start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Jeff Lattis is with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Jeff taking a break from his very busy schedule, where he trains pilots now on business jets. And of course, Jeff recently retired, relatively recently, a year or so ago from, he had a great career over at JetBlue. So Boeing now has this labor strike going on, a labor action. Boy, couldn't come at a worse time, could it, Jeff?
Well, their contract came due at a really bad time.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you the machinists, this is a machinist strike that's going on. 30,000 machinists went on strike at Boeing in Washington. And I don't know how long they've been on strike now.
About a week.
But the consequences is Boeing is going to lay off, I think, 30,000 staff members in the next few days.
That is.
So that's pretty bad.
That's devastating to the Pacific Northwest economy.
Yeah, you know, and the Boeing actually came out and they said, okay, we're going to give you what you're asking for in terms of pay. And the union turned it down because there was something to do with the retirement. And, you know, I don't know. It sounds like they might be closer than further apart.
Okay.
I don't know if the strike's going to last that much longer. Because it sounds like Boeing is trying to, you know, appease the union the best they can. So, but yeah, they got bad problems, and I think the union is using that as leverage. And you know, if this goes on much longer, I don't know what's going to happen to aviation.
As a former special weapons analyst and officer with the Air Force, you've got to be fascinated. I certainly am, and there'll probably be a movie about this when you've got pagers and walkie-talkies carried by thousands of the Hezbollah group members exploding, 37 people killed, nearly 3,000 injured. Wow. What's your take?
I don't, you know, I've only briefly read a little bit about the cell phone thing. Essentially, from my understanding, it was phones that had like regular batteries in it. Mm-hmm. And one battery was like a normal battery and the other battery was like explosives.
Wow.
From my understanding. Now, I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm just trying to garner. I didn't know we were going to talk about it. It was an article that I kind of read. I don't know. That sounds, because it wasn't just Hezbollah people that got hurt.
No, it wasn't.
There were other people that got hurt in this too. And that's where I kind of have a little bit of a problem with it.
Yeah, well,
so,
I'm sorry, I know we weren't going to talk about it, but I saw this headline that just came through about Israel has launched a wave of new airstrikes today against targets in Lebanon. So, there's a fear that this thing is going to escalate.
Yeah, that's always been my fear. So, you know, I don't know what to think about the Middle East right now in terms of Israel. And I do have Lebanese friends. One of them just came back from Lebanon and said, really, in Beirut, it's almost like there's nothing going on. They said, as a matter of fact, the person said they had a great time. And so It's kind of isolated, I think, up in the northern parts of Israel. So here again, there's a lot of sketchiness about what's going on. I don't know how many airplanes they launched up there. You know, so wish I could help you out a little more on that one, too.
Yeah, and as Tom pointed out, Tom put up on my screen a moments ago about those pagers and the walkie-talkies. The shipment had been intercepted and then modified, if you will. But yeah, that's kind of how all that happened. But it's kind of a new twist, isn't it?
To me, this I it's one thing if you're targeting somebody specifically, but yeah, this was a little too broad brush for my liking. That was my job in the Pentagon, by the way. It all had to do with precision, and that you're going to go after a specific target with very little collateral damage. Mm-hmm. And using cell phones blatantly like that, there's a lot of collateral damage, even though it's just a small explosion.
Yeah. The situation in Ukraine, they're getting a lot of American weapons now. Going to make a difference, in your opinion?
Yeah. I think it's already making a difference. And I don't know if you read up on this, but just, was it this morning? They blew up an ammunition dump in Russia with a drone.
Mm.
So I don't know what kind of drone they were using. They are using F-16s right now, and obviously they keep a lot of that very tight-lipped. They don't want, you know, people to know what kind of munitions they're using or anything like that. But I do know that we gave them some of our more sophisticated weapons that we said we weren't going to use anymore because they fall under their cluster munitions. And we even though we didn't sign the landmine treaty, we honor it. Mm-hmm. And we kept our munitions that were cluster munitions, even though they weren't mines. But we basically pledged we wouldn't use them. And now after Ukraine kicked up, we said, well, if the Ukrainians want to use it, if they use it on their country, because it's a dud rate issue, how many of these little bomblets don't go off.
Yeah.
And we basically said, if you use them in your own country, that's your problem. So you clean it up. And the rest of NATO agreed with it. And as far as I know, they're using that stuff because the Ukrainians are making some advancements right now.
How does the F-16 compare to the equivalent to the Russian aircraft equivalent, whatever that might be? I have no idea.
Well, the more modern Russian aircraft, you're talking like the Su-27s, the Su-27, and then they have a follow-on to that. I believe it's the Su-35, which is more of a strike kind of airplane. They're pretty advanced. They're capable. They're very high performance, very high thrust ratio. The problem that the Russians have with their aircraft is their avionics aren't nearly as sophisticated as ours.
Really?
And their weapons are much less superior. So, yeah, and you know a little bit about what goes on here down at Raytheon.
Of course.
The weapons, our air-to-air weapons are much more superior than anything the Russians have. And our radars are much better, even the F-16s, which are older F-16s, by the way. Their radars are still superior to the Russian radar. And the pilots are probably better trained, too.
All right.
So all that comes down to, the Russians are still a threat to them.
Yep.
But I'd rather be fighting one of those Russian airplanes in an F-16 than a MiG-29.
All right, Jeff Lettuce. We'll let you get back to teaching, get back to your students. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you later.
All right, Jeff Lettuce with us. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.